Welcome to Core Balance for Women's Health with Marcel Pick.
Well, hello, everyone. Hi, Raz. Are you there? Not quite, perhaps. Raz, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Hi, Raz.
Oh, I can. All right.
So I would like to introduce everyone to Raz. Raz Ingrassi is one of my most favorite people. Raz is the president of the Quadrinity process that I talk to you about all the time and the Hoffman Institute. And we're going to talk today as well as answer questions for those of you that are interested in talking a little bit more. I think over the weeks, those of you that listen to me regularly understand that I oftentimes talk about how our adrenals are a part of our health problems that causes hormonal imbalance as well as causes us to have problems with fatigue. And I also talk a lot about how our emotions and how our issues of perceived stress, so it's not just day-to-day stress, so stress from our childhood can play into our health problems in a huge way. And many, many years ago, I learned about the Hoffman process and used it in my practice. And then I actually went a couple of years ago myself and was just blown away at how powerful this program was. And I've also referred a number of patients to it, and every single one of them comes back with the same experience, is that it really was life-altering for them. And for those of you that are interested, I was really interested in looking for a program that I thought would change physiology, because I would oftentimes have women in my practice that were coming for annual exams, and I would notice how unbelievably uncomfortable they were with the thought of having either a pelvic exam or a breast exam. And what I noticed is even those women that had been in therapy for years, that didn't change. So I was looking for a program that I thought would change physiology, and that's what I thought I found with the Hoffman process and the notion that we can actually change physiology by doing our deep emotional work. So that's why I wanted so badly to have Raz on the phone today so he could talk with you a little bit more about the process and talk with you about why I think it's so very powerful, and then we can answer some people's questions as we get more specific. So Raz, thank you for doing this with me today.
My pleasure.
So, Raz, can you help people understand why you think that the Quadrinity process is really very, very important for all of us to do at some point in our lives?
Well, you know, Marcel, you and we're all interested in alternative and complementary modes of healing, and we hear constantly the refrain of mind-body medicine. And so when we talk about the mind, look, I mean, invariably we're talking about the emotions. And
yeah.
There's science has established very clearly that certain types of negative emotions are toxic to health, to optimum health. And, you know, the person who's got high blood pressure is being taught to meditate and to de-stress, to relax. The person with other issues in their body may be referred to yoga or Tai Chi or something like that. And so we are seeing that people need to find ways to resolve unwanted emotional states that seem to be persistent, that are chronic, and are not life-affirming. And so we'd all like to have our beings flooded with positive emotions and we know that those are life-affirming. And I must tell you that, you know, before antibiotics were developed, doctors were trained much more in how to call forth a person's life force, so that, because they understood that if you could somehow increase or trigger a person's will to live, you could break a systemic infection in the body quite frequently. And so, of course, with the advent of antibiotics, we don't teach that anymore. But it was always based on triggering positive emotions, triggering experiences of love and well-being. And, it makes a difference. Now, just to add another line to it, and I could talk for quite a while, but the University of California did a pretty big research study, independent research study, which has been published in a peer review journal on the process, and we found two things. One is dramatic decreases in unwanted negative emotions, like depression, anxiety, hostility. Even OCD was quite strongly affected, but depression and anxiety sort of disappeared. Measured a year later, they were still way, way, way down, not more down than anything else that's ever been studied. You know, in the worst cases, the most severely depressed people had come back, I think 17%, but that's very low, believe me. Mm-hmm. But simultaneously, there was a dramatic increase in emotional intelligence, spirituality, forgiveness, compassion. And so the and measured a year later, it had gone up even higher. Mm-hmm. So the combination of a lot less of what you don't want and a lot more of what you do want is quite has quite an impact on a person's overall sense of well-being. And the people reported a year later that they had consistently more increased vitality and energy. Now, that was reported, significant change there. What we did not do is study, blood pressure and pulse rates and those kinds of things. But I think you and I know that these changes in the emotions are consistent with, decreases in or increases in good health. I was going to say decreases in unwanted symptoms. Certainly, depression is associated with a lot of diseases and symptomatology, and reduce in anxiety a lot as well. And when you reduce those two things, the person's overall health is going to improve. And when you increase the positive part, it just provides a better, more positive environment for us to live in. So that's the essence of it.
So one of the things that I see, Raz, in patients and as well as myself and people that I refer to the process is that they really do start to claim their spiritual side. And they also start to understand that sometimes the way that they kind of plow through life, those people in particular that are perfectionists, and that the intellect has much more charge than the emotional child, although sometimes she or he screams and yells a lot. Wouldn't you say that the integration of those four components to who we are is something that's very profound in the process, and it's not something that I see people able to do so well in psychotherapy?
Right. The Hoffman model is that we are four-dimensional, physical body, intellect, emotions, and spirit, and that these four dimensions are occurring simultaneously and interactively, but they're not necessarily very well integrated. So let me see if I can give you an example. You know, when you have an unwanted negative emotion, it will tend to localize in your body. So anxiety might show up as a tightness in your stomach, and if you have it forever, you may have digestive tract problems, or it could show up. Depression could show up as something else, and we all have these aches and pains in our body. Now, if you think about really positive emotions, what I call spiritual emotions, they don't localize in our body. We've all had, by the way, like if we're embarrassed, our face will flush or something like that. Or if we're heartbroken, we literally feel a heaviness, really a strong heaviness in our chest. But those are negative emotions. They localize in our body. They exist somewhere. They get stuck. When you have a positive emotion, like love, love will fill your body. Joy will fill your body. Exhilaration will fill your body. Even compassion will fill your body, and I think compassion is, we're all going to encounter a certain amount of suffering in our life, and as we cultivate compassion for others and for ourselves, it allows us to move through that without losing ourselves. So we can stay connected to others, be present to their pain without losing ourselves. And that's a strong discipline. So I say that positive emotions fill our body, negative emotions localize. And where they localize, wherever that tension appears, are the seeds for a health issue.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. So, Raz, can you help people understand the whole notion of negative emotion? Because one of the things that I think people don't understand is that a lot of times as we're children, we develop patterns of behavior that serve us so well as we're growing up. It's how we survive. But many times those same patterns of behavior we continue on as we go into adulthood, and those patterns no longer serve us at all.
Right.
Get in our way and prevent us from having, you know, relationships that are healthy. And women oftentimes, in my practice anyway, have the same type of relationship. They might leave one, but they continue then to struggle and not have all that they're looking for, all that they want.
Right. I like to kind of do a little switcheroo. You know, people say, oh, I married my mother or I married my husband. And my response is, you mean you started converting her into your mother as soon as you got married? Because those primary attachments with our parents are the model for everything we're going to do for the rest of our lives, unless we find a way to intervene with it. And I'll try to illuminate that a little bit. I mentioned the quadrinity model. Think about a little baby, and a little baby has no control over its body. It has no intellect, and a child will have, oftentimes we have a sense of spirituality around a child, or it's sacred, but we don't have the child itself doesn't have a spiritual consciousness yet. So that child is living all of life on one channel only, and that is emotions. And there's the parental child-parent bond, and that consists of a continuous flow of unconditional love between the child and the parent. And when that love becomes conditional or otherwise interrupted, a child is desperate to reestablish it. Absolutely desperate, because a child is 100% dependent on its parents for its survival. So if the bond is broken, and I'm a child, I might not be taken care of. I have to, at all costs, reestablish that bond. So any number of things, a death, we can think about that bond being interrupted through a death, a divorce, a drug addiction, some other form of abandonment, an illness, and we can also, when that happens, the child feels a tremendous sense of abandonment. And then there are other forms that also interfere with that parent-child bond. And more frequently, what we see is that a parent makes their love conditional. I'll love you if you do this, or if I'll love you if you're a certain way. And some parents are so neglectful that the only way a child can get attention is by doing bad things. So a child learns, if I want mommy or daddy's attention, I need to act out. But a child absolutely must have attention, love and attention from its parent, and so it will do anything to get it, because, we need to maintain that bond in order to survive. I'll go one step further, which is that optimally, what we would hope is that parents could reflect back to their children the child's emotional and spiritual goodness like a mirror, mirroring it back to them, so that over time the child learns to discover, oh, that goodness exists in me, and develops a healthy sense of self-esteem, a healthy confidence in oneself, a healthy sense of self, and of healthy boundaries. When the child believes, real or imagined, that the love has been cut off then the child, in desperation to reestablish that love bond, will emulate whatever mood the parent is in. And frequently, when it's cut off, the parent's experiencing some real difficulty. They might be having an argument with their spouse, or some health issue, or a financial problem. And so the child will emulate the parent in that, like soak it up like a sponge, soak that emotion up to be like the parent. And it is, that's what Bob Hoffman called the negative love syndrome, because we bond with our parents in their negativity. And then we grow up and we've got their negativity, or we rebelled against their negativity and produce something else. Now, we know from brain science that there's like a super highway from the emotional brain into the intellect. And then there are these little tiny pathways going back from the intellect into the emotional brain. So the emotional brain has the capacity to flood the intellect and leave us speechless, paralyzed. And it is precisely that flooding that we want to overcome, that we want to find a way around. And as I said, the pathways back into the emotional brain are very small. So your ability to shift or change any of this unwanted negative childhood material, is your chances of doing that are slim and none going through the intellect. So the learning went in experientially, and it needs to come out or be unlearned experientially, and that's what we offer in the Hoffman process. The opportunity to really focus on what of that stuff is working for you and what's not, mm-hmm. and to release it.
Mm-hmm. I think that, for a lot of people as well as myself, that was the most powerful part, is really kind of coming out on the other end, feeling anew, feeling fresh, but also having worked through a lot of the deep emotion in a physical way.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, Raz, I think what we do is we store a lot of that emotion in our physicality, and we don't have any access if we're just talking things through.
Right.
And what I'm astounded by more and more is, and Dr. Northrup, Chris Northrup talks about this a fair amount as well, is that we do store our emotions, and those emotions then have physiological consequences. For those of us that are in gynecology, if we see people that have any kind of history of abuse, and it doesn't have to be physical, it can actually be emotional, that oftentimes they have certainly an increased incidence of what we call dysmenorrhea, which is cramps with their periods, or heavier bleeding. And sometimes when they work through some of their issues, it's not always so, but there can be those times in which people really work through those things and they get better. Or chronic abdominal pain or chronic shoulder pain. There's a relationship between how we hold our emotion and how we hold our physiology that has very, very dynamic effects in terms of the body.
Absolutely.
So what I love about the work that you do and that you help people through is to understand that even our hormones, because our hormones are so intimately connected to our cortisol level, which is so intimately connected to our emotional life, that has dynamic effects on us physically.
Yeah, well, the emotions are the interface,
right?
With the body. And by the way, you mentioned something earlier, which I forgot to sort of underscoring, I wanted to. You talked about the importance of spirituality. In the University of California research study on our program, they found out that it was the increases in spirituality in our work predicted the decreases in depression, anxiety, hostility, OCD, and so on. So, for anybody listening to this who has an inclination toward deepening some spiritual practice, it's just going to help you a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it puts you right on the road to healing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And reminding you that the spiritual connection, which Louise is so amazing to talk about all the time, and many of the other authors on this program on Hay House Radio, they're so mindful of how important it is to stay connected with spirit. And it's so easy for all of us in our busy lives to forget that, to take that moment every day to stay connected, because that also is very, very powerful in terms of how it helps heal the emotions and our lives in general.
I've been using a new word lately. I've been trying to, such words as transformation and enlightenment are used so much that I've been thinking more lately about epiphanies and what I call epiphanic meanings, epiphany, epiphanic experiences or epiphanic learning. And epiphanies occur in everyday circumstances, but in an epiphany, everything shifts, and it's a spiritual experience, and you know it. Mm-hmm. And what you learn in such a is so compressed and powerful that you carry it with you the rest of your life. And so I think we're talking about epiphanic learning here, because the way that we all need to change and that we yearn for growth and more love in our lives, more connection, we recognize that a spiritual awakening will do that. And so it's important to extend ourselves toward, in whatever way that is for us that works, toward spirituality, toward spirit. And when we do that, spirit extends herself toward us. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And I think that the other part of the whole notion is that we also don't just rely on the intellect. We really do learn to listen to what the body's telling us, because for many people, they're very cut off, from their head to their body. And in my practice, I talk a lot about paying attention, where's the tension? How did you feel when somebody said that? And help people to kind of make the link physiologically to what's going on emotionally. Because our lives, unfortunately, are very, very busy, and people don't know how to tune in sometimes. So just learning how to tune in, how to be having that spiritual connection, how to understand that if our life isn't working, that it's possible to turn it around. With the notion of affirmations, as well as understanding the negative patterns that we have in terms of how we are in the world, all of it is connected.
Marcel, would you mind if I just led people in a very simple little exercise so they could identify for themselves the power of some of this early childhood programming that is now in our way? I could do it very quickly.
I would love to do that, but we're going to, in 2 minutes, have a break for five. So how about if we go and we do that right after the break? Would that work for you?
That sounds terrific.
It does sound terrific. And also, I think we have a caller on the phone that actually has a question about hair loss. And how about, Anu, if you stay on the line with us, and I'll take that phone call after we've had this little exercise that we do with Raz. So that we can kind of get your question answered as well. And then anybody that wants to call in after we've done this exercise, feel free to do that, and you'll be able to get the number during the break as well, because we'd be certainly glad to answer questions that you have. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to continue with the conversation about the whole notion of spirituality and the whole notion of negative love in our lives, as well as how important spirituality is and connecting up with also the body and helping the body to identify for us some of the emotional issues that we may have, because all of this is very, very powerful. And the unfortunate thing in medicine in my world is that we really don't give a lot of credence to the emotions. We talk about stress reduction, but people very, very seldom make the connection between our emotional life, our stories, I call that, our histories, our negative patterns in terms of how we function in the world, and the connection to us, the physiology. And I think I'd like to talk more about that in the second half of the show as well. So for those of you that are interested in giving us a call, we'd be welcome to answer your questions and dialogue some with you. And Anu, I'll get to yours as well after the break. And we'll do a very short exercise for everybody, for those of you that are interested in kind of looking at how our lives are very, very much affected by our childhood, and also the patterns of behavior that we sometimes take with us into adulthood that just don't oftentimes work for us. So stay tuned, and we'll see if we can help you after the break. All right, take care.
This is Core Balance for Women's Health with Marcel Pick.
Hello, everyone. We're going to be now continuing the discussion about how our emotions affect us physically. And we have our guest today, Rick Ingrassi, who's going to be leading us through a small exercise. And then I'm going to answer a question about hair loss. And then I'm going to answer a question about can the process be done at home. So, Raz, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, thank you, Marcel. I just wanted to do a simple exercise that people could all relate to. To help them identify the power of childhood negative emotions. Because, you know, most people say, I don't remember my childhood, or that was back then, and I want to know about living today, and so on and so on. So, here's a little exercise. First, bring to mind something that the parents of your childhood, maybe when you were 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, something that they did that you really didn't like. It bugged you or you hated it. You know, it's one of those things that children tend to say, when I have kids, I'm not going to be that way. So bring to mind one of your parents or the other's behavior that you really didn't like when you were a kid. And now, got that, look up into your adult life and look in three areas. Look in how do you treat yourself? Do you do this to yourself? Do you do this to other people? Or do you have you arrange things so you have other people in your life doing it to you? So maybe you had a very critical parent, so you could be self-critical. You could have people that in your life that you're very critical to or toward. And you could also have some people in your life that are critical of you. And you could, if you... Well, look in those three areas. You'll see that that pattern that you didn't like in your childhood is still alive in your adult life. And it's so strange because when you were just a little kid, you knew that you didn't like it. You knew you didn't want to be that way, and you promised yourself you'd be different. Now it's all these decades later. You're free. You're an adult. You can be any way you want. So why are we continuing to be that way that we knew we didn't want when we were kids? And the answer is in that bonding that I talked about earlier, that childhood bonding for survival. And it's precisely those types of emotional, we call them negative love patterns, because they're automatic, they're programmed and patterned ways of behaving. You know, those are controlling our lives, and we have to find a way to release the energy that's stored in them so that we can live with much more authenticity. Sometimes I talk about, recalibrating your inner compass or really having a resilient heart. I've heard it said that the journey from head to heart is the greatest trip you'll ever take. Mm-hmm. And so it's that kind of thing that we're talking about. It's a healing experience.
That's very true. Well, I promised that we would get to Anu, which is a different question about hair loss. Anu, are you on the phone there? You still with us? Hello?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
And what is your question?
Okay. Sorry. Well, I've been experiencing hair loss for the last 4 months or so, and I have very thick black hair, so it's bothering me a lot because I've never experienced it. I'm 42 years old,
okay.
And I'm a very good eater. I exercise. I'm very holistic in my approach to life, and I've done all the tests for thyroid, and everything seems pretty normal, though my doctor did prescribe me for, like, antifungal shampoo.
And do you have a lot of dandruff? Is that why they were prescribing that for you, or?
I had a lot of itching off because I chose a new hairstylist, and my scalp would itch a lot, and I think it just got worse.
Okay.
But I'm
well,
not
there's
sure
a couple,
what it's causing.
Well, there's a couple of pieces to the puzzle. Some of it, you know, when I know that their blood work is all normal, the thyroid is normal, and that there's no fungus. I mean, fungus can definitely cause hair loss.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part to this also, Anu, is that stress can do this as well. So what I don't know is I don't know enough about your history or enough of your story to know if stress is a component to this, but I would also suggest you look back to 4 months ago to see what changed. The other part is that you could also be perimenopausal, and there are hormonal changes that occur during perimenopause. Mm-hmm. So that may be another piece to this equation. And you have to really work with someone that's going to look at the whole puzzle. Mm-hmm. Because protein is going to be really important. It's going to be really important to use biotin, because biotin is a precursor to essential fatty acids, and that's really important in terms of health as well of your hair, as well as the follicles as well.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen a dermatologist?
No, I haven't, but do you think I should do that?
Yes, I do. I would see a dermatologist mm-hmm. to have them actually look at your scalp and actually take some of the tissue and look under the microscope to see if you do have a fungal infection. Because if you do, you're going to want to put something on that, because that can cause hair loss as well.
I'm doing the antifungal shampoo. I've been using it for the last 3 weeks now.
Okay, so I would then stop it for a week and make an appointment to see a dermatologist and see what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to be the next piece to the puzzle. After I do blood work, I do a dermatological evaluation on the scalp, and I'll look to see if I see any under the microscope or even any other abnormalities.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that's all negative, then you may indeed want to look at the component of stress, because cortisol can be a part of the puzzle.
I've also had extreme stress from last December till June,
uh-huh.
like about 6-7 months,
uh-huh.
because of work. And so that is done. You know, June, it's been 6 months now.
Right. So that may not be a putt. Well, sometimes if you don't get it again, you know, you might want to work with somebody that's a functional medicine practitioner
mm-hmm.
so that we can find out what your, you know, what your nutrient status is, because it would be helpful to know what your nutrient status is. Even though you're taking vitamins, you may not be absorbing them properly.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Marcel, I want to add one other thought here. Sometimes, and I'm not saying this is true for you, only you would know, and I'm not asking you to disclose this on the radio. But sometimes when people have a real trauma earlier in their life,
mm-hmm.
Something, you know, they were in a war zone, something really terrifying happened. Later in life, something else can trigger that memory or can be similar to it. And the trauma is not acted out, but things happen with our bodies because it just triggered something. So it's not obvious necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but you're reliving it, and it's affecting your physiology.
Okay.
It's actually called a new perceived stress. So it's not that the stress is there right now,
mm-hmm.
but something could trigger it that reminded you of some of the pieces to the puzzle, and that's part of what the talk is about today. So I would really do some inventorying to find out if any of that's true. I would definitely see a dermatologist.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would look to see, okay, the stress is over, but is it really physically over for me?
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. You're right.
Yeah. You know, is my body responding as though, yes, it's done, you're safe now, it's okay?
Right.
Or are you feeling still like I'm still at battle, kind of waiting for the next shoe to drop?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will do that.
Okay, good. Thank
you so much for help, both of you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye. So let's go to, I think it's Maria, who's got a question for us about, can the process be done at home? Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm thrilled to be on your show.
Sure.
So I love your show so much.
Thank you so much.
And I've been eating your way.
And how do you feel?
I feel wonderful. I have so much more energy. It's incredible.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's a wonderful way to recover from veganism.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It's amazing, actually, how sad that's true. But there are so many people that just don't do well as vegans.
Yeah, yeah.
So congratulations.
And do you know what? I bought the Hoffman Process book on your recommendation from the show.
Yeah.
I have yet to read it, I have to confess. But
that's okay.
I wanted to, I know that the Hoffman Process can be done at retreat centers and other locations in California, but I wanted to ask if the process is something I can do at home. I've been looking to do shadow work and really dig
mm-hmm.
deep into my fears.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to do this if I can do it by myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's not really possible to do by oneself. It needs to be done in the presence of trained professionals who can guide you and be there for you. And there's a certain sense in which there's a resonance, and there's a way in which the human heart can open in the presence of another human heart that just is impossible, it's not predictably possible on one's own. And so there are many wonderful things you can do on your own at home to strengthen your spirituality, but this particular piece is not available. It really requires guidance. Maybe someday we'll have a home study course that can do some of it, but right now we don't.
Yeah, you know, I really understand that, actually, and I have a lot of respect for that, because I have been trying to dig into my shadow, and it's scary. And
I
definitely feel like if I had someone there to guide me, I could get so much more out and process so much more.
Tell me your name once again.
Maria.
Maria. Maria, one of the things that happens in the Hoffman process is that we move people right from the outset into a strong experience of their light-filled, loving, spiritual self. And from that place, we go into the depth of pain. Now, most people are looking to connect with, what we call the light, God, whatever, divinity, as a way of escaping and getting out of their emotional pain. We're doing something a little different. We're taking you into that light-filled place within yourself so that you have the strength and power to go back into the pain without being swept away, because your spiritual dimension of self is actually stronger than all the pain. And standing in that place, you have the resiliency and the power, the capacity, really, to face your pain and to embrace love. So you embrace love, you face pain, embrace love. It's like climbing a ladder. And the Hoffman process is not something that we do to you. It is a learning experience that you go through the steps, but you need a guide, and you need really also the support of other people to accelerate the learning tremendously.
Yeah, that's great. So, do you do this several times a year?
Oh, about 30 times a year. Yeah, so it's two or three times a month.
Wow! And how long is each?
It's 8 days, 7.5 days.
Wonderful.
So you can look us up at HoffmanInstitute.org. We're a nonprofit organization. HoffmanInstitute.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're very
welcome. And I'll probably be there, whether I'll meet you or not. I hope to meet you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The other part, Maria, to know is the part that I really was intrigued by initially when I learned about it was that for many people, the process is wonderful and life kind of goes on and they forget about it. They feel fabulous when they come back, and it kind of, as weeks and months and years go by, it's forgotten. Well, you go home with some tools that really, really work, and they have support groups all around. So you're actually mm-hmm. able to really journey into a lot of what we talk about on Hay House Radio, the spirit connection, the affirmations, understanding what the patterns are, changing them with a lot of visualization. So it lines so incredibly well with the whole notion of Hay House. So
absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
Just when you think 90% of us is subconscious, and that's what drives us, and there's so much fear there.
Absolutely.
There's so much to work on.
There are two things when you go inside. There is fear, but there's also beauty.
Mm.
Okay, so in our subjectivity is the stuff we're afraid of, and then there's who we really are, this deep and radiant spiritual self. And we often don't gain access to that beautiful part of ourselves because the fear part has waved us away. And what we're doing with Hoffman is we're giving you the opportunity to go into that into both dimensions of yourself, heal so much of the negativity, just massive amounts get healed, that, and then you gain the capacity for confronting yourself and for dealing with the stuff. The stuff no longer terrifies you. When something arises, you've got tools to deal with it, so that instead of, oh, I like Jean Houston's, I think she uses the description, spelunking the inner your inner terrain. Mm-hmm. Spelunking your inner terrain. You know, a spelunker is someone who explores caves, right?
Yeah.
And I can imagine that if you go into a cave deep down into the earth and you turn all the lights out, it could be pretty scary. Mm-hmm. But if you're a spelunker, you like going there. And so once we gain the feel for it, the interest in it, we become more avid about what's really inside of us, and our genius lies within as well, our beauty, our power, our compassion. So, you know, the idea that you can have love without pain is a fiction. And so in order to have more love, you have to develop a capacity not to endure more pain, but to release it, to confront it and release it. Pain can be released. Love only grows.
Oh, beautiful. My goodness, I can't wait to do this. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Much love to both of you.
You too.
Thank you.
So we have another question, Raz, which I think is actually perfect for us, and that is we have somebody who actually wants some tips on things they can actually do at home, not necessarily to do the process, and that's okay. Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just in shock because I've been calling for a very long time, and I never get through, and I just never perceive that I'll ever get through.
Well, you're
so here
now.
You are. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Do you give toasters out? No. I'm joking. All right.
That's so funny.
So your question.
Okay, so I don't have a real concise question, but it's sort of forming in I've been working very hard on improving I was diagnosed with adrenal fatigue.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I diagnosed myself with fibromyalgia. My doctor's like, Barbara, no, I think what you have is adrenal fatigue. And so I've been working with her for a couple years through natural hormone replacement and diet and exercise and vitamins, a good vitamin regime and de-stressing. And I read the book Adrenal Fatigue by Dr. Wilson, which has been very helpful for me. And I've just been improving and improving, improving. And I went and did my blood work and got, I found out all the foods that I'm allergic to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've stopped all of those foods. That's
Yay.
Just been recently. I'm just like 5 weeks into that. And, I mean, I feel like I've hit the miracle cure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Good for you. Wow.
So I'm doing, like, lots of really good things for myself. I just have a huge improvement. And I just feel healthy and more balanced and more peaceful. My A character defect I'm still really working on is procrastination. And I'm trying to figure out when you were talking about what that connects to as a child going back. And I'm thinking it's about being, my father would point out my flaw. He would never tell me what I did well.
Yes.
He would, if I looked beautiful and had on a new dress, he'd look at me and say, you have a string hanging. You know, he would find the flaw.
Right.
And so I think I have this attachment to perfection, and I get frozen because of that inability to be perfect. And so I don't start at all on whatever project it is that's just, you know,
right,
causing me a problem. So I would like to know how I can improve on this and work to get rid of this character defect that's not serving me any longer.
Clearly. And so you're talking about procrastination, which you relate to not being perfect.
That's sort of where I feel like it's got to be. That's the only thing I can relate to. I mean, as far as I go back as childhood, I didn't feel like I was a procrastinator in my childhood, but maybe I was. But there's some type of fear going on there, or that if I'm not going to do it perfectly, I'm not going to start it.
Right. And, you know, you don't get criticized until you try something and
correct.
All that. So have you done anything like just, well, I think there are a couple things you can do that I would suggest. One is to, and this is a simple exercise that was developed by an organization on the West Coast here in Santa Cruz called Heart Math. And
Heart Math?
Yeah, Heart and then M-A-T-H,
okay.
Heart Math. And they have books and things.
Okay.
But they have this simple exercise that I have found to be really beautiful. And what it is that you just close your eyes and follow your breathing, observe your breathing, and then imagine that you're breathing through your heart. And as you do that, you'll get a somatic, you know, sensation near your heart space, and it shifts your attention from your head to your heart. And then recall positive experiences. Recall a time when you experienced deep gratitude. And then while you're breathing through your heart, you review that in your mind's eye. Recall a time when you were feeling creative. Recall a time when you were feeling resilient and strong. And you just go through a list of things that you would, feelings that you would like to have. And so can you name the positive emotion you would like to be experiencing?
Well, I feel a lot of those emotions that you were just speaking about. And I've been truly putting energy towards them for quite a while, you know, doing a gratitude list every day.
Sure. So what I'm suggesting is to find the experience that you want to have. So, for example, the opposite of procrastination might be creative and energized. I'm just speculating now. But energy, let's just say enthusiastic, right?
Okay.
Enthusiasm. And
okay.
So what I would recommend is you close your eyes, establish that experience of breathing through your heart, recall a time when I felt completely enthusiastic, when I felt enthusiastic, or when I felt great enthusiasm.
Okay.
And as we have about a minute and 35 seconds left.
And something will come, memory will come up, and just go through that again. Relive it in your mind's eye, noticing your body sensations, and then recall another time when I experienced great enthusiasm and relive it. And then
okay.
Keep breathing through your heart and opening your eyes, and you'll find that your mood will have shifted.
Okay.
So it's a way to get through it.
Okay. To get moving.
Yeah.
And the other part, Barbara, is that you want to try to do this in baby steps. Don't have this expectation that you're just going to, oh, by tomorrow, I'm just not going to be procrastinating anymore. It's
oh,
a
no,
journey.
I've been living with
it's
it for
journey.
So long that, yeah, it's right. I get that.
Absolutely.
I get that.
And, you know, when you're successful, to really, really acknowledge, wow, whoa, look, I did it. This is, you know, to really kind of get into the pattern of seeing that you were able to succeed.
My other question was, do either of you know anything about holotropic breath work?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was just curious. I love that. I do
stuff.
That.
Yeah.
And
it's very powerful.
Real, it's
absolutely.
Very powerful for me.
Very
I didn't know
powerful.
How close that was to what you were talking about, what you're doing at your institution or if it's something totally
it's
different.
It's quite different.
Okay.
But it kind of incorporates some of that in some ways into it, but it's very, very different because it's still looking at some of the patterns and how we can change our lives with the patterns that we have.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.